ॐ
सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। समस्तजनकल्याणे निरतं करुणामयं नमामि चिन्मयं देवं सद्गुरुं ब्रह्मविद्वरं सद्गुरुं ब्रह्मविद्वरम्। ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयम् व्यासेन ग्रथितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणी भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायनी अम्ब त्वामनुसन्तदामि भगवत् गीते भवद्वेषिणी यं ब्रह्मा वरुणरुद्रमरुतः स्तुन्वन्ति दिव्यैस्तवैः वेदैः साङ्गपदक्रमोपनिषदैः गायन्ति यं सामगाः ध्यानावस्थिततद्गतेन मनसा पश्यन्ति यं योगिनः यस्यान्तं न विदुत्सुरासुरगणाः देवाय तस्मै नमः देवाय तस्मै नमः। ॐ श्री गणेशाय नमः। ॐ श्री सरस्वत्यै नमः। ॐ श्री गुरुभ्यो नमः। हरि ओम्। टुडे वी विल बी स्टार्टिंग द फिफ्थ चैप्टर ऑफ द भगवद गीता। सो आई थॉट वी कुड ब्रीफली समराइज व्हाट वी हैव कवर्ड इन द फोर चैप्टर्स and what we have studied so far. Of course, there is a lot of material, but in about 5 or 10 minutes, I'll just do a brief summary of what this chapter continues from the previous chapter. So the Bhagavad Gita is divided into three sections. There are 18 chapters, so 6 chapters each. And this represents the Mahavakya Tat Tvam Asi, you are that, from the Upanishad. So that thou art. So thou, me, I, this individual ego is covered in the first 6 chapters. Who am I? At the body level, mind level, and as the consciousness, who am I? All that is covered in the first 6 chapters. The 7th to 12th chapter talks about God, that. And first 6 is thou and 7 to 12 is that. So Rishi is telling us that you are that, you are in what you we are in the first 6 chapters and what God is in the 7th to 12th chapters. And in the 13th to 18th chapter, Rishi tells us, Asi, how we can become that. How we can, even though we are that, but we don't know that. So the process of reaching the goal is covered. So the entire 18 chapters follows a very beautiful rhythm, very beautiful essence. And in the what have we studied in the first four chapters, there is a very beautiful example I heard. See, I'm going to visit my friend in Anaheim Hills. And I'm driving on I-5 in my car. So I drive and 100 and whatever, 40, 50 miles. And I come to the Anaheim Hills exit. So the car has brought me, I-5 has brought me to the exit from Bakersfield, 2.5 hours. But now after I take the exit, the GPS now starts guiding me. Okay, now make a left, now make a right, go 1 mile at the stop sign. So 5, 6, 7 turns are given, and finally I reach my friend's house. So similarly, the first four chapters are like I-5. First four chapters, 1 to 4. Take me close to that truth. Now, what is the truth that is covered in the sixth chapter? Like my friend house is my goal. So the sixth chapter of meditation is my goal. Now, what will connect the fourth to the sixth chapter? Remember how the GPS took us through small turns, multiple turns? So the fifth chapter is the connection which gently takes us from the fourth to the sixth. So fifth chapter is like the GPS, which connects me to my goal. And then after six, of course, then they describe who is God and so on. So what have we studied in the first four chapters? I'll cover in brief. The first chapter is Arjuna's confusion. He sees the armies of the two sides and he sees how much destruction, and he says, I do not want to fight. I do not fight, want to fight against my grandfather, my guru, my family members, my cousins. Because his idea is that I as Arjuna is fighting the battle. And so he just gets disillusioned, he gets depressed, and sits down in the chariot and tells Bhagwan, I won't fight. And then Bhagwan tells him how his thinking is wrong, and Arjuna finally surrenders to the Lord. And Bhagwan first starts with the highest knowledge that none of us perish, because all of us are that one Atma, that one consciousness. The body will perish, but you and I, we are eternal. That's what Bhagwan says. So to think that you are killing these people are ignorance. Then he comes down to Arjuna's level and tells him at his level why it is his duty to fight this war, because his fight is not against Bhishma or Drona. It is a fight of good versus evil. Then Bhagwan summarizes the entire Bhagavad Gita briefly in the second chapter and ends the second chapter with Sthita Prajna Lakshanani, the hallmarks and qualities of a realized master, a wise person, how that person functions in the world. Then third chapter, Bhagwan starts the teaching of Karma Yoga. Not only action, but how action should be dedicated to the higher, done and unselfishly, without ego, without I, me, and my. And through that, you will evolve. Your mind will get purified through Karma Yoga. And then whatever result you get, I accept that as Bhagwan's prasad. It is his gift to me. So whatever I deserve, I will get. So that is the third chapter. The fourth chapter we just finished, where Bhagwan talks about the 12 yagnas. First of all, he starts with the fourth chapter with saying that he is that supreme Ishvara, the supreme Lord, and manifested on this earth. And this knowledge is eternal, was given by him to the sun god at the beginning of creation. And then he covers the different yagnas, the 12 yagnas, where it shows us that if we lead a life of self-control, practice all these yagnas, work again, sinking our individual differences, when all work together, that becomes the yagna spirit. And regular study and practice of this knowledge is all covered in the fourth chapter. And then Bhagwan ends the fourth chapter with saying that the highest yagna is jnana yagna. Knowledge is the highest, where your ignorance is sacrificed in the fire of knowledge. Jnanagni sarva karmani bhasmasat kurute Arjuna. The knowledge, the fire of knowledge, will destroy all your ignorance and all your doership. And so that's the fourth chapter ends. Now, in the third chapter, Arjuna at the beginning had asked a question that if you are saying that knowledge is superior to action, why are you asking me to do this horrible action? And Bhagwan explains to him that you do it with Karma Yoga. Now, fifth chapter, he also starts with a question which seems very similar, and we'll come to that question. But before that, I would just like to talk a little bit about the three gunas, how these gunas we can apply in our spiritual journey. And it is said that there are three gunas. We know tamas is laziness, rajas is passion, and then sattva is purity and knowledge. Now, people start with laziness, and I don't want to do all this, I don't want to work, I don't want. So their actions, not only the spiritual knowledge, but even their actions, a lot of people are tamasic, you know, let society take care of me, I don't need to work, let me live on welfare, and so on. And so from inactivity, not working, then they are told, no, you need to go out and work. So from tamas, they go to rajas, where they work, but they work for I, me, and my family and myself. And they work a lot, they earn a lot, but it is all for me. So that is rajas. From tamas, at least he has progressed to rajas, at least he's working. And then from tamas to rajas, and then from rajas to sattva is when he meets a guru who tells him that the message of Bhagavad Gita is to work unselfishly. So as he starts working for others, his mind becomes purified, becomes more sattvic. And in such a mind, the knowledge stays firm. Of course, in tamas and rajas also knowledge can be given. But if your mind is sattvic, pure, then the knowledge stays better in the mind. So he has progressed from tamas to rajas to sattva. And finally, the Lord says that we will see in the Bhagavad Gita, even beyond sattva, to that pure state of consciousness, which is beyond all three. And the Vedas, to some extent, also follow a similar pattern, not exactly the same. But how our spiritual journey can grow, not in action, but in spiritual journey. So the Vedas have four portions. One is called mantras, which is about the beauty of nature, because these rishis lived in the Himalayas or lived in the forests, and they saw by the rivers, and they saw the beauty of nature. So the expression of that, their wonderment came out in the mantra portion, the first portion. The second portion is brahmanas. Brahmanas are the rituals. And these rituals were done by them for, there could be two purposes. One is you want something in the world, you do ritual. You're not getting a child. Rituals are meant for that. You are starting your new business, do some yajna, puja. And then rituals were also done to go to heaven. You know, there were some rituals guaranteed if you perform them very well. Of course, it needs a lot of effort, you will go to heaven. But then these rituals should be dedicated towards God, should not only be for me to go to heaven or for worldly success. And so the third portion is Aranyakas or Upasanas, where the worship of God is brought in. So mantras that are dedicated to worshiping the Lord. So I have seen the nature, I have done rituals for myself. Now I turn my mind towards God. So they are slowly evolving us. And once your mind has become purified with dedicating your actions to God and worshiping God, then you are ready for Upanishad, which is the fourth portion. So that is how the four parts of the Vedas. So the mantras, the brahmanas, mantras are nature, brahmanas are rituals, aranyakas are worship of God, and Upanishad, which is the highest knowledge, which has been summarized in the Bhagavad Gita. So here is just a, I think maybe took about 10 minutes or so to kind of summarize what we have studied so far and give a little background of the fifth chapter. So we'll start with chanting the fifth chapter. You may repeat after me. Om Shri Paramatmane Namaha.
Shri Paramatmane Namaha.
Atha Panchamodhyayah. अर्जुन उवाच संन्यासं कर्मणां कृष्ण
कर्मणां
पुनर्योगं च शंससि यच्छ्रेय एतयोरेकम् तन्मे ब्रूहि सुनिश्चितम्। टुगेदर ओम श्री परमात्मने नमः अथ पञ्चमोऽध्यायः अर्जुन उवाच संन्यासं कर्मणां कृष्ण पुनर्योगं च शंससि यच्छ्रेय एतयोरेकं तन्मे ब्रूहि सुनिश्चितम्। So the fifth chapter starts with Arjuna's question. See, that is the beauty of Vedanta, of our teachings, that the student has freedom to ask questions, at times even to disagree, as long as it is not done in a disagreeable manner, in a pleasant manner, in a respectful manner. If the student has any doubts, he is allowed to clear them and discuss them. It is not that whatever I say, you just listen and get out. So here now he asks a question which is similar to the third chapter, but still different. So Arjuna Uvacha, what did he say? Sannyasam Karmanam Krishna. Oh, Krishna. So Krishna was his friend, his brother-in-law. So he's very friendly with him. Sannyasam Karmanam. Karmanam means of actions, sannyasa, renunciation of actions. That is one, renunciation of action. And then punah again, yogam cha shamsasi. Shamsasi means you are praising. So sometimes you say renunciation of action is better. Sometimes you say yogam. Here yoga means karma yoga. So sometimes you say karma yoga, you have seen in the fourth chapter and in the earlier chapters that some places he has praised karma yoga. Some places he has praised renunciation of action. Actually, fourth chapter ends with praising the path of renunciation. So he says, sometimes you praise one, sometimes you praise other. Yat Shreya, which is better? Shreya here means better. Etayo, Eta, of these two, Ekam. So tell me one, which is better? Is Karma Yoga better or Sannyas renunciation better? Tat me bruhi, tell me that sunishchitam, tell me that clearly. So one time you are saying yoga, karma yoga is better, other time you are saying renunciation is better. So please tell me which one is better, and tell me clearly without any doubts or without any wishy-washy. So here we see that Arjuna's thinking has evolved. First, in the third, he said action and sannyas, you know, just the two. Now he's saying he has understood that my goal, duty is karma yoga. So he has come to that. But he's not clear whether I should do karma yoga or whether I should renounce. And his idea of, previously his idea of karma was rituals, but now he has understood that karma is karma yoga. But his idea of renunciation is put on orange clothes, go to the forest and meditate. And that's what he wanted to do. So he says, which one should I do? Please tell me clearly. And so now his question has evolved from karma to karma yoga, and his understanding of renunciation also has improved. Now, why does he ask clearly, tell me one or the other? Because we all live at the level of the intellect, and the intellect loves to divide. Intellect does not see the oneness. Okay, this is mine and this is yours. This is, I like this person, I don't like that person. I like this path, I do not like this path. I like this color, I do not like that color. So all these arguments and discussions we have, this food I like, this food I don't like. So the intellect loves to divide, and the scriptures tell us that the intellect is good for discrimination, but it should be used to pick what is right and what is wrong, what is good and what is bad. In the world, you may have preferences. You may like a particular color, a particular food, but that does not mean you hate and the other color, or you hate the other food, or you hate other people. You may have some that you are friends with. So we have to go beyond the intellect, and so to Shreyas. And what is Shreyas? Shreya, eta yoho ekam. Tell me what is Shreyas. So the Katha Upanishad has talked about Shreyas and Preyas. Shreyas means what is good, and Preyas is what gives me pleasure. And in Preyas, when we follow the path of pleasure, then what we do, we try to change the world. If only my husband would change, my life would be much better. Or if my teenager son listened, then my life would improve. So we try to change the husband or the teenager or the job. You know, I don't like this job. If I leave this company, go to another company, then I'll be happy. Or I don't like the Bakersfield, the heat. It's too hot in the summer, 110. Maybe if I move to San Luis Obispo or somewhere, I'll be happier. So we try to improve our life by improving things outside. And I change this person, I change that person, I change my job, I change my town. But that is temporary, you know, even if you change somebody or correct somebody, sooner or later that person will not be following your instruction. You change one job, you go to another job, you find same problems are there in the other job. I leave Bakersfield and move to another city. Each city has its own problems. So trying to change the surroundings is a temporary fix. Sooner or later will lead to sorrow because you cannot change the world. So Shreyas is change yourself. Change yourself, and then you will see the world will change around you. And even if the world doesn't change, your mind becomes more pure. And what is Shreyas? Shreyas is going towards the self, towards God, consciousness. So when I change myself and I become calmer, I become more peaceful, more loving, more compassionate, the world is an echo of what I put out. I get that back. So automatically my life gets better. So the scriptures say, change yourself. Do not try to change the world. Even Mahatma Gandhi said, be the change that you want to see in the world outside. So when I change and my mind is calmer, then whatever situations used to bother me won't bother me anymore. One of the Swamiji's had told me that how do you know you're evolving? When things that used to bother you don't bother you anymore. That is a very important hallmark of spiritual growth. So it's like you finished your meditation and you have come out of your house and you're walking on the sidewalk, you know, maybe to go to the store or something. And this man comes in a hurry and pushes you roughly and then goes without saying sorry. Originally, you would get angry. Whoa, what is this guy? He's so rude. He's so... But you have come out of meditation. Your mind is calmer and you think, you know, maybe this man was really in a hurry. Or maybe he was disturbed and maybe he didn't see me. So that same situation which would make you angry, now you look at it from the other person's point of view, that why do you think it happened? You know, and then you forgive that person. It's okay. It's not a big deal. So Shreyas is not only what improves me, but how the whole society improves, not by my effort, but just by my becoming more pure, then my actions are pure. So he says that, Shreya, I want you to teach me how to make my life better and how the world can be improved. And Swami Vivekananda ji, who was, of course, a great master of spiritual knowledge around 1890, around 1900, he was, and he said that, you know, what we think, life would be better if there was only good people. You know, why do I have to be bad people? Why can't there be things I like? Why are there things I dislike? Situations I like and dislike. Why is that? Why can't it be life be smooth? So he says that if you think that you will only meet people you like and you won't meet those you dislike, or if you only have situations you like and you won't have situations you dislike, if you think you will only have joy, you will not have sorrow, then that is like saying, let there be only sunlight, let there not be darkness. That's not going to happen. If sunlight is followed by darkness, is followed by light. So same way, life is followed by likes and dislikes, good and bad situations. So, you know, you understand that. So how do we evolve? So there are two methods to grow spiritually. One is part-time and one is full-time. What is part-time? Part-time is the four ashramas. Our scriptures, our rishis told us that we have four stages of our life, approximately. So the first 25 years is called brahmacharya, where I am study. I am a student and I don't get married. I, you know, keep myself in my studies. So first 25 years. Then from 26 to 50 is called grihastha ashram, or the householder's life, where I get married, get a job, get a career, have children, you know, work hard to develop my life, make myself successful. We are not saying that you shouldn't work. Be successful, earn money, but earn money honestly. And a portion of your earnings, give it to help society. So 26 to 50 is called the grihastha ashram, the householder's life. Then from 51 to 75 approximately, they say, is the retired life, where you are not yet completely retired, but you are slowing down. So after 50 and 60, when your work has done enough, you say, now it's time for me to slow down. So I cut down my work. I spend more time in spiritual studies, in sadhana, in meditation, in study. And also I become less attached to the family. See, in the householders, attached does not mean I don't love, but do not spend too much time, you know, chasing after grandkids and worrying about what children are grown up, they are married. Let them have their life. You don't need to interfere. When you need help, When they ask for help, you go help them. But don't all the time chase after children and grandchildren. Why is he not taking care of his child the way I took care of him? So we have all these. So from 50 to 75, gradually withdraw from the world and connect your mind to God. And then after 70 or 75, then full time should be spent in spiritual studies. That is called sannyas. So this is part time, where you have gradually built up your world, then withdrawn from the world and turned towards God. The second path is what's called as the full time, like our Swamiji's, you know, those who come here, Swamiji's, different Swami Ishwarananda-ji and Swami, you know, Aparajitananda-ji and different Acharyas come here. So what they have done, the Chinmaya Mission, for the first 25 years they studied, they got their graduation, but then they decided, I do not want to get married, I do not want family. So full time they want to devote to spiritual studies. So what they do, at least in the Chinmaya Mission, these college graduates are interviewed, and then if they are found to be fit, then for 2 years they are completely immersed in Vedanta. They live in the ashram there in Bombay, in Mumbai they call it, and each one is given a room. It's like a dorm, you know, two people in a room, and of course they have to live a life of self-control, completely very strict. And there they are taught for 2 years, complete immersed in Vedanta, Bhagavad Gita, Upanishads, meditation, chanting, Sanskrit. They become proficient in Sanskrit for 2 years, and then they then the when they graduate, when they come out of that, they are given a choice. Some of them go back to their family and get married, but those who want to continue this full time, then they start serving the mission. Then they are assigned to be posted in some, you know, some centers where they're, if they are new, they gradually learn. And then after a few years, they are wearing white when they are studying. When they are posted, they take sannyas, they are given yellow. And then once they have been working as brahmacharis wearing yellow for 8, 10 years, when they are found deserving, then they are given Swami title and they wear orange clothes. So you must have seen some acharyas wearing yellow and some orange. So that is the explanation. And at that time, they don't own anything. And they completely give up family connections and work and money and everything. And their whole life is devoted to learning themselves. Of course, they continue to learn. The learning doesn't end in 2 years. They continue to study and they teach. So they evolve, and their goal is enlightenment in this life. So that is the full-time job. And the example I think about is Swami Ishwarananda Ji. When he was a student, he actually was a software engineer and very, very, very well qualified. And this was when computers were just coming, and he was already a software, you know, programmer, engineer, very knowledgeable. And he gave that up, and he had a nice job. He gave that up to join the ashram. Now, if he had stayed in that software, and that was in the beginning of computers, he probably by now would have had a wonderful job, probably had his own software company, you know, internet startup and a company, been very successful, living in a big house, would have a car and servants and all that. And he gave all that up, and he's now in Los Angeles, where he has a one bedroom given to him by the mission. He doesn't own a car. He has a computer given to him by the mission. Clothes are given to him by the mission. Food is given to him. And he has nothing to, even the worldwide head of the Chinmaya Mission, Swami Tejomayananda Ji, who was, and they don't own anything. He doesn't even own a house. So you think how much they have sacrificed. Actually, they have gained so much. Yeah, worldly wise, you may think, oh, that one guy is a millionaire and another one. But this person, like Swamiji, thousands of people have been inspired by their actions, how much they have helped others by teaching, by sharing their wisdom, and how much they have grown spiritually. Their purpose of life has been fulfilled in this ashram of sannyas. So there are two different paths for you and me. We are already in the family and we are quite advanced. So we can follow the first path, but we can give more and more time to spirituality, reduce our time in the world, and more time in teaching, in learning, in growing, and meditating, you know, doing prayers. And so that my goal of life, even if I'm not able to do as a young, at least now I can devote most of my time to it and grow and evolve spiritually and reach enlightenment also. So this is the difference between full time and part time. And our idea of this body originally was, I am this body. You know, body alone is real. Then somebody tells you, no, you are not the body. You have the body. Okay, so I'm the ego and I have a body. You know, so we are slowly growing. Then they say, no, you are not the ego. You are the spirit. So spirit and matter, you know, Purush and Prakriti. So you are slowly evolving. Okay, I'm not the ego. I am the spirit. Then they say body alone does not even exist. Body is an illusory appearance upon the spirit, which is the total consciousness. And the whole universe is an appearance upon that. The example is the mud and the pot. You say there are two, mud, and then there is pot. Then they say, no, pot is, there's no such thing as pot. It is mud alone appearing as this pot. And when the pot breaks, it will become mud. So from mud and pot, now you have come to one. Mud alone exists. So similarly, from world and spirit, you evolve to there is no world, spirit alone is. World is an appearance. I see the world, I deal with the world. We are not saying that. But you grow beyond this world. So what is the glory of this knowledge? I have a little lengthy story. I can try to shorten it. So there was this man, multi-millionaire, very, very rich. He was the richest person in town. He had the greatest security system. He was afraid people will rob him. So much money he had. He had guards that were patrolling day and night, you know. And so this thief decides, you know, if I'm going to steal, let me steal his house. He has so much money. No use stealing some small little house here and there. So he studies the whole thing, how the security system is, how the guards patrol at night, every 15, all that. He makes a detailed chart and he's ready. And so the night when he's supposed to rob, he finds out that the family members are all out of town on, you know, vacation. Only the guards are there around. So he's going, and there is a temple outside nearby to that person's house. And he just stops for a couple of minutes because he says the guards are patrolling. There is a 15-minute gap between how they patrol. In that gap, I have to enter. So he waits there. He says, just let me wait till, you know, the guards go by, and he's watching. And as he's watching this, there is a Mahatma, there is a saint who is teaching. And he's teaching about meditation. And he says, quiet, alert, and vigilant. You know how Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda used to say in meditation, your mind should be quiet, should be alert, focused on consciousness within, and vigilant, let your mind not wander out. So he's listening, quiet, alert, and vigilant. It goes in the back of his head. He doesn't pay much attention. But that line somehow, was what he gets out of that. He listens for a couple of minutes, 5 minutes, and then he moves on. And then he watches. And as the guards go away from that area, he jumps the fence. He's able to, do all the alarm systems. He had studied all that, turns everything off, goes in, goes into that room where the safe is, and a lot of money and gold is in that safe. And as he's standing there, suddenly he hears quiet, alert, and vigilant, you know, that the Mahatma has said. He said, wait a minute, I forgot. He had forgotten that there is a guard in the back, and periodically he shines the light in that safe. So he immediately hides. He said, oh, this is the time for the... So that line makes him alert, and he hides, and the guard comes, shines the light, it's nobody. Then this person unlocks the safe, steals the money, and goes. So he's gone, but he starts thinking. He says that one line, quiet, alert, and vigilant, I heard it saved me, because I would have been captured and killed. Let me go and listen to the whole hour, what this Mahatma is saying. I only listen for 2 minutes. So he keeps the gold, whatever, sells it. And he goes next day and he listens to the whole hour. And then third hour, every day he goes 1 hour, 1 hour. And then more and more he starts living the life, what the Mahatma is teaching, gives up robbery and, you know, all those bad habits. So the point is that this knowledge is so powerful that sometimes one line can change. That's what happened to that saint. So there is the power in this knowledge and what happened to that thief. And Bhagwan says in the Bhagavad Gita, yadyapi chet api chet su durachara bhajate mam ananya bhak sadhu revasa mantavya samyak vyavasito hi saha. He says, even there may be the worst criminal, the worst bad person, but if he turns his mind towards me and remembers me fully and brings me in his life, then I consider him a sadhu because he has decided. So that's what they say, that you can change your life by directing it. And then there is two kind of sannyas. You know, we are talking about sannyas, giving up. One is the vividisha sannyas. Vividisha sannyas means what these students, like who go to the Chinmaya mission, give up everything and study and meditate and for their enlightenment. So that is vividisha, student. And vidvat is the one who is evolved, who has become enlightened master. So like Swami Chinmayananda, after he attained enlightenment, he traveled throughout the world teaching this knowledge. And then the example we have is of Raman Maharishiji, who was in South India. And he, after enlightenment, just was living outside one temple. He had a small room, a small hut. And he was just living there. And he never traveled anywhere. He never went anywhere. He didn't give too many talks. He composed two or three texts, very brief, but that's about it. And he would just sit and be in his bliss. And thousands of people, hundreds would walk by every day. And over the years, thousands of people walked by. And just sitting in his presence, they attained peace. There was one philosopher who came with a whole pad of questions that I'm going to ask this master. And he sat there for half an hour and he said, all my questions are answered. And in fact, one French journalist comes to this Raman Maharishi and he says, you are so enlightened, why don't you do something? That was his question. He said, this person just sitting in one place, they are blessing the whole of humanity. Thousands of people are benefiting. So different people, this may does not mean that one is more enlightened than the other or one is better. People may do different things based on their nature. So we cannot judge somebody, oh, this person is enlightened, this person is not. They say only an enlightened master knows another. You and I should just bow down to them and get what it means. So here, the question, I kind of made it a little long about what is the difference between action and sannyasa? So that is Arjuna's question. Now Bhagwan in the second shloka will answer the question. We probably will do second. I'm not sure if we can do the third one today. But two for sure we will do. Shri Bhagavan, the shloka number second. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Bhagavan Uvacha.
Sanyasa Karma Yogascha.
Sanyasa Karma Yogascha.
Nishreyasa Karavubhau.
Nishreyasa Karavubhau.
Tayostu Karma Sanyasat.
Tayostu Karma Sanyasat.
Karma Yogo Vishishyate.
Karma Yogo Vishishyate.
Together, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Sanyasa Karma Yogascha. Nishreyasa Karavubhau. Tayostu Karma Sanyasat. Karma Yogo Vishishyate. So, Sri Bhagavan Uvach, Bhagavan Sri Krishna said, Sannyasa, Karma Yoga, both. Sannyasa, Yoga, Cha, means Sannyasa and Karma Yoga. Sannyasa is giving up, Karma Yoga is service, serving the world. So, you are asking which one is better? Karma Yoga is better or renunciation of action is better? We have, in this first shloka, we talked a little bit about renunciation and work and how to evolve. So Arjuna has asked this question. So Bhagavan says, Sannyasa Karma Yoga, both. Nishreya, Shreya means, remember we said Shreya is the best. Nishreya means nishchare, nishchayena shreya, means the absolute good. Not only what is good for society, what is the absolute good for everyone. Nishreyasa karau, they will, both will take you to the highest. Karma yoga and karma sannyas, both ubhav, ubhav means both of them will take you to the shreyas, to the highest goal, absolute. But you are asking which is better of the two. You want me to tell you one. Tayoha tu, of these two, two means but, karma sannyasat, karma yogo vishishyate. Than karma sannyas, karma yoga is superior. Wait. Bhagavan, wait a minute. Are you confused? He says, why do you say I'm confused? He says, previously in the previous chapter, you said sannyas is better and, you know, surrender and give up. And now suddenly you're saying karma yoga is better. Or maybe there is a printing error, you know, maybe the publisher made a mistake. It cannot be karma yoga is superior to karma sannyas. So, the answer is, it depends. Depends on the student. So in Prashnopanishad, which is the Upanishad we studied, there are six students who come to the teacher. And they are asking, they stay for 1 year serving the teacher and then they ask questions. The first one asks about creation. All he wants to know about the world. So teacher answers, okay, creation is prana and rayi, matter and spirit and the whole world game, all that. Each student's answer is higher. The final sixth student asks the highest question. I want to know about the enlightened master, the Sola Kala Purusha. Who is he? How to reach? So based on the question, the teacher to the final student gives the highest answer of the Upanishads. So this teacher knows the student's level from the question, and based on the question, he can answer. So these masters know what is our duty and where we stand, and they, according to that, and also we can judge ourselves where we stand and how we should pursue this path of knowledge. Swami Chinmayananda Gurudev, one man comes to him and he listened to Swamiji's talk. He was, for a whole month, he was very inspired. And he had heard about Swamiji's ashram, and he said, I want to come and live in your ashram for 2 years. I want to study and give up the world. So Gurudev knew him. So he says, yeah, you want to do that? He says, yeah. He says, how about the two little children you brought into the world? You should have thought of that before. Now you are married. You have two little children. And you want to leave them and come in my ashram? Who's going to take care of these? He says, finish that your duty with them. Finish their school, college. Once the two are graduated from college, you can devote full time. So that is what these masters know. So people say, well, Buddha left his wife and son. Then how do you say that is okay? See, Buddha didn't want to marry. He was forced to marry at age 16 because an astrologer had told his father that either he'll become a great king or he'll become a great sadhu. And the father said, I do not want my son to become a sadhu. So he gets him married at age 16. In 1 year, he already has a boy, child. He said, now he's not going to go. And he makes sure he's not exposed to the world, not see anybody. And as we know the story, the one day Buddha sees sorrow, he sees suffering, he sees illness, old age and death. And he says, that's not what I want in my life. So he leaves and goes. But his situation was very different. So that's what the point is. And what we can do as we are on this path, at least we are now, all of us who are listening to Bhagavad Gita should be on this path, is Upanishad says, Swadhyaya Pravachanabhyam Na Pramaditavyam. Do not deviate from the study of scriptures and sharing this knowledge. If you have the ability to share this knowledge, do that. Otherwise, at least study on your own, apply that in your life. And sharing, it can be like, you know, giving books. You know, if you some wedding, some couple is getting married, give them the Bhagavad Gita, you know, something like that, or an anniversary, or encourage people to, you know, to listen to these. So they say that should become your daily goal, daily study of scriptures. And if you can, share this knowledge and daily regular meditation with sincerity, where our attention should be. Like today we were talking in the meditation, those of you who logged in at 10:20, we talked about how to use Om to shift your attention. And they say, apramatena vedavyam, without any carelessness. With full attention, the mind should be on that. So that's how we should meditate. But what we do, we sit for meditation and, you know, it's cold. You know, winter has come. It's cold. I'm a little cold and I am feeling a little sleepy. Let me go get a cup of tea, you know, before I meditate. Let me go make a cup of tea. I go, I'm boiling the tea, you know. And then I say, you know, tea alone, you know, they say you're not supposed to have. Let me have a little toast or a little bun or something. So we warm the toast, we put butter, and then we make the tea and we eat and we drink. By that time, half an hour, 45 minutes are gone. Mind is racing already with the tea. And your meditation is out the window. So they say that spirituality should be done with full attention. And that's what he says. And why does he say karma yogo vishishyate? Because he's talking to Arjuna. He's not talking to an Upanishad student who has left his home and come and living in the ashram to get this knowledge. He's talking to karma yoga, Arjuna, who has so many vasanas, he has so many desires, he still wants to get his kingdom back. He has so much, you know, anger towards Duryodhana, Karna. And so he's not ready for meditation. He's not ready for sannyas to put on orange clothes, go to the forest and meditate. So he says, for you, karma yoga vishishyate. Even but another student had come and asked Bhagavan, who has given up his family. He's just graduated from college. He doesn't want to work. He just wants to spend his life in prayer, meditation, and teaching. Bhagavan will say, yeah, for you, karma sannyas. Just as those six students who came were given different answers by the rishi. So it depends on where we are. As we said, if we are now at the stage where our children have gone and we are comfortable, we should slowly divert our mind, just as the river is going in one direction and the water is going, a lot of it is being wasted in the ocean. So what they do, they build a dam and then build a dam and then divert the river to where it's needed. Whether a lot of farming, you know, it can be used in farming, in industry, the water for the cities, for the villages. So the water which was being wasted is now being used for the benefit of all. So similarly, our mind, which was being wasted in the world, we were just wasting it, just as putting water in the ocean. So putting our mind wasted in the world, not that we should completely not have any interest in the world, but reduce it, whatever the bare minimum I need to do, and slowly divert my mind's attention towards spirituality, towards service, where I can help others and help myself to evolve. And while I am, whatever work I am doing, do it with the attitude of karma yoga. So that's what Bhagavan says. Arjuna, you are a young man. You have still a lot of passion. You still have a lot of desires. You are not ready. And then actually the Pandavas, after they won the war, they ruled the kingdom for many years. And then when their grandson Parikshit was ready, they gave him the kingdom and all five of them went to the forest and spent the rest of their years in meditation study. So that's what he's telling him, that the situation is different and each one has to see where they are. And then I'll just summarize in two lines what is the essence of all the thousands of Upanishads and spiritual literature, Bhagavad Gita and everything in two lines, which our masters have given us. And then that we can expand on those two lines in the rest of this chapter. They say, Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya Jivo Brahmaikya Na Paraha. So he says, there is only one truth, and that is Brahman. That alone is there because it is non-dual. There is nothing else. So what is this world we are saying? Jagat Mithya. The world is Mithya. Does not mean I don't see it, but it does not have an absolute reality. It is changing. So our attention should be shifted from what is temporary to what is permanent, what is changing to what is changeless. And the world, again, one way of looking at it is God alone is there in this whole world. That is one way of looking. Another way of looking is there is no world. God alone is there. So that is how, you know, on the path of bhakti, you can say, yes, God is there. He's the creator. Everything is God. And I am also created by God. So that is the path of bhakti. The path of knowledge is spirit alone exists. That alone is real. This whole world is an illusion. And you and I find the world very real. But realized masters say that once they have woken up to this truth, then they realize that the spirit alone exists and this world is just a projection upon it, just as the snake is a projection upon the rope. So this world is an appearance. It's not that I don't see the world, they deal with the world, but they do not give too much reality. So that is the essence of all the scriptures. And jivo brahmaiva na paraha. So God and I are one. We are not separate. So, 3 points. World is illusion. God, Brahman, God alone is real. And God and I are not separate. These two or three points, if you take, that is the essence of all the Upanishads, essence of Bhagavad Gita, essence of entire spiritual knowledge is in this this beautiful saying, which of course given by the rishis, it's not mine, I just read it, and so I thought that is something to share. So today we'll end with Arjuna's question, that which is superior, and Bhagwan says that for you, and we discussed briefly the path of Karma Yoga and the path of sannyas, how to withdraw from the world and different kinds of sannyas, renunciation. And Bhagwan says for Arjuna, Karma Yoga is better. And for us also, we have to see that as we do Karma Yoga, slowly as our mind becomes purified and the knowledge makes more sense, then we slowly evolve to renunciation of the world and holding on to God. And then we'll, in the fifth chapter, we'll expand much more on what is renunciation, what is God, how to detach and how to work. So a lot more points are there. So we'll start next week with that. And I have another beautiful story. I didn't have time today, but I'll tell that next week about how to live one's life. So we'll end here. We have about 10 minutes. If anybody has any questions or comments. Okay.
Yeah, Hari Om. Everybody can hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much, Anilji. It's a beautiful summary you've given. So chapter 5, verse 1, what I learned today is Arjuna asked Krishna to clarify which path is superior, the path of renunciation of actions, that is sannyasa, or the path of selfless action, karma yoga. So Arjuna is still unsure whether he should renounce the world and withdraw from duties or engage in action without attachment. He seeks Krishna's guidance on which path leads most surely to liberation. This question arises from his confusion or conflicting advice about renunciation and action. So then Krishna replies that both renunciation of actions, sannyasa, and selfless action, karma yoga, lead to liberation. But among the two, karma yoga is superior to Arjuna.
Thank you.
And Krishna explains that true liberation doesn't depend on physical withdrawal from the world, but on inner detachment. A person who performs duties without attachment to results is spiritually more advanced than one who merely renounces outwardly. On that note, Anilji, I think, you know, on one of the occasions you mentioned, you know, which was very nice to hear, and I can tie this up, like your father was a karma yogi, and you did mention that how he started a charitable hospital for cancer patients long time back, and he was like probably, you know, kind of, I'm seeing some kind of parallels here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other comments? Any questions? Ansa, you have any comment? No? Okay. Lata, you have something?
I think Brooke had an question.
Oh, sorry, oh, yeah. I didn't see. Okay, go ahead, Joy.
Okay. I was just going to thank you for clarifying the second shlokula regarding the conversation from the Lord to Arjuna, because this taken out of context makes it seem like one is preferred to the other in all cases. But just clarification of that makes me realize, and probably everyone else, that they're both good, but depending on where you are in life, one is superior. So in my case, since I'm where I am, I can say renunciation, you know, is my path with good karma yoga when I can.
Right, right. Together, yeah. You have
Together, but there's none probably more superior, but you might think, depending on where you are in life, since he's speaking to Arjuna, Arjuna definitely yoga action, was important, where renunciation in his stage of life did not seem like the answer, So thank you for clarifying that.
Actually, I actually believe that one should do all. See, I'm
Yes.
convinced of that. One should do karma yoga, do service, do some bhakti, do some regular prayers, do some study, so all of them. So, and then meditation, all four things should be done at the same time, because the more time you put in this, the more you will be successful. My father used to say, the more sugar you put in the tea, the sweeter the tea will get. My father was not Gujarati, by the way. But he said, "Jinni mithi, chini paoge, unna, chai mithi hogi." The more sugar you put, the sweeter your tea will be. So similarly, the more effort you put in spirituality, the more you will evolve on this path. So that's why. So I think one should do, and in my opinion, there's nothing wrong in doing everything, but predominantly something may be better for you. Like somebody may be more into yoga, somebody may be more into bhakti and prayers, somebody may be more into knowledge. But I think knowledge alone is dry. Knowledge should be accompanied by love for God, prayers. And once you have knowledge and prayer, then you love God, then you serve Him. See, so it all comes together. If I know about God and then I love God and then I serve God. So path of karma yoga, bhakti, gyan, they're all together. They all work together, and that's in my opinion. So, or if you start serving God, then you say, who is this God I'm serving? So you get knowledge. And then once you get knowledge, you get love. Or if you start loving God with bhakti, then who is this God I am loving? You want to know. So like, somebody goes to the temple, that's good. But then after some time, who is this God I am worshipping in the temple? Is that only Bhagavan Sri Krishna in that statue or Lord Shiva, or is it something more? So, and then you automatically serve. So I think all of them go together, in my opinion. It's not watertight. One's whole life should be in that direction, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. It's weird. Like in the morning, I didn't know what we were doing today, actually. And I was going through the same questions in my mind. And in fact, I was kind of contemplating on that. And I kind of wrote to myself. And what I wrote is, all yogas might, I kind of thought, which, obviously, like Jnana Yoga is superior. That's what I've been hearing. But still, there are four yogas: Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Dhyana Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga. And all these are present in a person at all times. I'm doing what, working energetically, offering results to God, Karma Yoga, seeking truth to un through inquiry, understanding, Jnana Yoga. Dhyana Yoga, meditation, seeking stillness and inner awareness. Then Bhakti Yoga, I'm doing seeking unions through love, surrender, and then chanting and all these things. So I think what you're saying exactly is resonating what I was kind of, it's a question plus answer to me in the morning, what I was thinking. And now I guess it came, unknowingly, it came in this. In the conversation here. And also, I think Bhagavad Gita, it's the more and more I'm understanding Bhagavad Gita. And in chapter 18, Krishna unites both paths, I think, if I'm right or wrong. Like
Yes.
one who is established in knowledge neither grieves nor desires such a person by devotion. That's bhakti, knows me in truth, enters into me. So bhakti is ultimate fulfillment of jnana. That's what he says. I don't know.
I think Yeah, we'll come to that.
Yeah.
Actually, in fifth chapter also, he will expand more on what sannyas is. Even the next shloka is very unusual description of sannyas. So we'll do that next week. Thank you very much. Hari Om. We'll see you in 1 week. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kaschid Dukkhavag Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om. Thank you very much. Hari Om.